Now, Enoch Powell famously said that all political careers end in failure. If so, have any ended with as much failure as the premiership of Theresa May, a woman who gambled with the massive majority she inherited and ended up relying on the DUP? A woman who started by drawing Brexit red lines and insisting no deal was better than a bad deal, and who leaves office, warning her successor they will have to find the compromises she failed to find in Parliament. Now, throughout Mrs. May's troubled leadership of the Conservative and Unionist Party, we've spoken many times to the Financial Times political editor, George Parker. He's on the line from London again, and our Europe editor, Tony Connolly, is with us from Brussels. George, hard this morning not to feel sorry for Theresa May personally, but her track record is pretty abysmal, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, she had one job, didn't she? And she failed to do it. She's been Prime Minister for 3 years. She has a negligible domestic record to talk about. As you say, she threw away a parliamentary majority with an election she didn't have to call. And in the end, you know, on the biggest test of all, she failed to deliver Brexit, which was a big test she'd set herself. And she raised expectations far too high by setting out red lines that she could never meet. And as you say, then she spent the next 2 years trying to row back from that, rubbing out her red lines, basically accepting that no deal would be an economic disaster for the country, even though she previously said it wouldn't be, and ended up in a situation we had this morning where, you know, a tearful Prime Minister was leaving the stage. And frankly, you know, she's the third Tory Prime Minister in a row, possibly the fourth if you count Margaret Thatcher, to be destroyed basically by the European question. And it's only a question of who the fifth person is going to be, I think.
Yes, and Tony Connolly in Brussels, it's pretty clear that whoever succeeds Theresa May is likely to be a much more ardent Brexiteer. What's the mood there? Is no deal suddenly becoming much more likely than it was?
I think people are bracing themselves for that conversation. Clearly, the pathway looks, if you read the signs and the very graphic signs indeed, about a hard Brexit contest where you'll have this rhetorical arms race for the lead candidate to be burnishing their hard Brexit credentials. Most people here expect that someone like Boris Johnson, or at the very least a hard Brexiteer, will be coming to Brussels looking to renegotiate the backstop. And already there have been signs from the Commission and others, both publicly and privately, that is absolutely out of the question, even less out of the question if it's someone like Boris Johnson. If they weren't going to do it for someone who was, on the surface of it, reasonable and who understood the Irish issues, like Theresa May, they certainly wouldn't do it for someone like Boris Johnson in the current climate.
George Parker, can you give us some sense of why Boris Johnson is such a love-hate figure for so many in his own party?
Well, he puts a smile on people's face. He's got quite an inspiring orator. He makes things that look pretty terrible sound a bit better. He believes in Brexit, which, after all, is the key determinant for many of the 120,000 Tory activists who will choose the next Prime Minister, ultimately. He used to be a much less divisive figure. When he was Mayor of London, he was sort of played the One Nation card. He was socially liberal, cosmopolitan, enthusiastic about immigration and London's cultural mix. And then, of course, during the Brexit campaign, he squandered all of that. So we have opinion polls now saying that Boris Johnson is both the most popular Conservative politician and the least popular. He's become a much more Marmite figure. Mm-hmm. So you can see how he can become the next Tory leader, because the next Tory leader is chosen by Tory activists. Harder, possibly, to see him being chosen by the whole country.
And what would give many people cause for despair in terms of the direction of all of this, Tony, is the fact that once again you're hearing eminent ministers, members of cabinet, members of the government in the UK talking about alternative arrangements, talking about new negotiations. We still seem to be on the hunt for unicorns.
Yes, I mean, this is something that crops up time and again. And there is also a sense among some Conservatives that you hear that come October, there's going to be a new commission, a new council president, a clean sweep. And in this new environment, there'll be a bit of a reset, and that a new Tory leader will have a better prospects to reopen the withdrawal agreement. But, you know, that's simply does not bear scrutiny, because Britain negotiates with European leaders. Theresa May's main interlocutors weren't Michel Barnier. They were the leaders of the European Union, and they're all going to still be around in October, and the mood, I think, will be a lot less forgiving at that point. We may see a major shift to the populist right in the European Parliament elections, and people are not want to be seen to be kowtowing to a pro-Brexit, Eurosceptic Prime Minister. And furthermore, if he does need, and he or she does need, a further extension to Article 50, that might not be a given either, especially with people like Emmanuel Macron, the French president, who was very reluctantly agreed to a halfway house extension at the last European summit.
All right. Lots to talk about in the months ahead. But for the moment, this lunchtime, thank you to George Parker and Tony Connolly.